Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 51 of the Footmarks podcast. I am your host, Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And the title for this particular episode of Footmarks is Cloudy with a Chance of Sixes at the T20 World Cup. Shout out to Estelle Vasudevan. She's the one who came up with this particular title. And Jared, T20 cricket has evolved heaps over time. And scoring rates are currently hitting unprecedented peaks, right? As of now, the ongoing IPL is the fastest scoring franchise T20 tournament in history and has the biggest average as well. You've mentioned prior that you always thought that this will be the natural evolution of the sport and batting in general. And if anything, you thought that it happened a bit later than you had imagined. Can you elaborate on that thought?
I think I remember me and Freddie Wild having a look at some data. Must have been around 2017, 2018. We were in a press box together, back in the days when Freddie still came to test matches and hung out with the press. And we were having a look at it. And it was like both of us just thought that there was still a lot of conservatism in the way that batters went about stuff. You know, the most famous one, of course, is the sixth over has got a huge runs per over, and the seventh over has a small runs per over. And yet, quite regularly, you have set batters in that seventh over. There is no reason to bat that way other than the fact that that is how batters are taught. Oh, the fielders are out now, so we need to start again. It's like, no, you don't. You're set. You need to keep hitting fours and sixes, right? You just need to find a different way of hitting them than you were a minute earlier. Little things like that, conserving wickets, not taking as many risks as they should have, all the way through. I wasn't the only one. I think most analysts would agree. Kartikeya was talking for years about, like, Andre Russell was the obvious choice of how other batters are going to go about it in the future, right? And I suppose maybe someone like Fraser McGurk might be one of the first sorts of players coming through who just believes every ball should be hit for four or six, or it's a dot ball. And so with that, you look at the run rates, and you could see them in the article up on the website on goodareas.co or on the video, wherever you go. It's pretty flat for a long time, right? And then the last couple of years, 100, T10 cricket, there's been, even stuff like baseball. I think batters have now worked out, wait a minute, we can score much quicker than we thought we could without losing our wickets. And then you add the other bit to that, Behram, which is, there should be a natural, we should be scoring quicker anyway. There's not much that bowlers can do about the fact that grounds aren't about to get any bigger, right? Yeah. Bats aren't about to get any worse. And batters now understand two things: how to physically set themselves up for hitting fours and sixes, and how to mentally change their mind. So you factor all that in, it's like, well, how would bowlers be doing well? There would have to be an external pressure, like, say, the wobble ball, say, the reinforced seam of the kookaburra. Those are things that slowed it down a little bit. But overall, it makes more sense to get quicker.
Absolutely. And for everyone who wants to go check out the piece, you can go to goodareas.co, bookmark that website, and you can find all of our written content, videos and podcasts over there. So that's definitely one to look out for. And yeah, you mentioned the, you know, combined strike rates of all the major leagues. And when I say major leagues across the globe, I'm talking about the IPL, the Big Bash League, the CPL, PSL and the Blast in England. And over the years, if we look at the combined scoring rates, you know, the graph is fairly linear and the scoring rate hasn't really grown astronomically. It's fairly slow. But recently, you see that that linear graph has taken a turn upwards. And this is probably due to the combination of ultra-aggressive batters entering the scene, like you mentioned, Fraser McGurk, because we're going to see more of those now. And current batters like Travis Head have changed their game accordingly, and they're also playing like Fraser McGurk's, right? And you've got a great range of players. You've got bigger and better bats. And also, you know, the static dimensions of the playing field, as you mentioned. Mm. What element do you think has been the most significant, however, in this change of approach from batters?
I think in the IPL specifically, it is the impact sub, I think, is absolutely huge. You know, we've talked about the Evan Gulbis effect of looking at batting lineup and realizing that you can bat to number eight. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Ramandeep was batting for number nine for Kolkata in some games. And you're like, you know, good luck getting 8 wickets out to get to the tail in that sort of situation. So I do think there's an element of that. But I think it's probably the fact that players now have played enough 100 and T10 and all those sorts of things and seen that. Right. And, you know, I don't think it's an accident that Bazball came off the back of a revolution in one day cricket and T20 cricket.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes when you see the other format and you're like, well, wait a minute, we can score a lot of runs. You know, we can score at 15 runs and over. And we're not going to get bowled out here. And once teams start to see that, I think that's the big change for them. And a lot of it is mental because the technological changes have been there for a while, like the batting. Mm. That sort of stuff's been there for a while. The range hitting's been there for a long time. But I do think the big thing that was always missing was that belief that they could do that and that it was something worth doing. And clearly that has changed massively now.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about each of those leagues individually for a second. Let's take the Blast first, right? In England, where batters almost always average between 24 and 26. And the strike rate is also pretty much always between 130 and 140, which does make this a fast-scoring competition and a batter's league. And I mean, there are a few outliers over there where either the scoring rate was really poor or no one was getting out. That said, 2023 was the fastest-scoring Blast in the history of the Blast. That tells you something, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think 2023 is the year you really start to notice it in the numbers, where there's a few leagues. I think Pakistan had a huge scoring 2023 as well.
Yeah,
the IPL had a step up in 2023, I think maybe in the CPL. So it's clearly at that stage. And there was a bit of a regression before that because Kookaburra reinforced the balls, so people lost wickets more at the top. And that's gone away now. So I think that is, I think that's very fair to say that is a big part of it. And what I found so interesting, and you pointed this out already, most of these leagues have a real pattern to them. Mm. And the England one is a batting league. And I think most people who would play cricket would say that that's a batting league. And it's been known as a batting league. And then there's like 1 year where, you know, what was it, 2 years, I think, is it, where there's rain and no one makes any runs in those years. But other than that, it's, it's always been a pretty good batting league. And if you think about England international cricket, what they've been doing with their white ball pitches over the last few years, it kind of makes sense. And that's how we ended up with Bazball, right? Which is Root and Stokes and Morgan and Butler and all these guys, even Denley and Milan, the lower tier guys, Alex Hales and Phil Salt, they've all been smashing the ball domestically. And that was sort of what unlocked English cricket from where it was. So, I definitely think in that situation that there was you could see the pattern really, really clearly.
Yeah, I mean, it checks out, you know, given the white hot revolution that's happened in cricket. And now we see limited overs cricket has changed forever. At least England have changed the way they play drastically and they've stuck by it. And it's been a while now. It's not even like recent news. But you mentioned the PSL. I want to talk about it like from its inception, right? It started off as a bowler-friendly league, which doesn't really come as a surprise because A, it was being held in the UAE where the surfaces were slow. And then Pakistan is renowned for both its fast bowlers and, well, historically spinners. Currently, they're experiencing a bit of a drought. But then, you know, after the first few seasons, which were all like bowling seasons, the PSL moves from the UAE to Pakistan and it completely transforms. Now it's a batting league, right? So much so that, as you mentioned in the 2023 edition, the combined strike rate of that tournament was 144, which at that time was the most in any league ever. And currently, even it's only behind this ongoing IPL, which really, you know, paints a picture. So it is a bit wild, isn't it? Given how Pakistan is supposed to like have a bowling league. That's what conventional wisdom tells you, but that's not the case anymore.
I think what this tells you really is that I think if you would have asked me or you 7-8 years ago, we would have said, well, yeah, Pakistan's a bowling league, but it's because they've got so many good bowlers, right? And now we look at it and we go, Pakistan was probably a bowling league because the pitches. And that's really, really interesting because, you know, there's many conversations, you know, the BPL, which I didn't put in this. I did limit it to the, you know, the sort of the very major tournaments. And, you know, the Blast is has a lot of cricket as well. So it's a little bit more even than some of the other tournaments. The BPL and you're like, the pitches play probably the biggest part. And now we look at the PSL and we're like, now, clearly, that is true. It is the pitches that really dominate and change what a league is and how many runs are going to be scored there and how things are going to go. So I found that really fascinating because I had an inkling that CPL was a bowling league and that PSL was a bowling league and some of the others that we'll talk about. But it's not until you put it all in front of you and you go, oh, wow. Yeah, now I see the patterns right here. Yeah. And I didn't realize that PSL had changed that much until I looked at this. I knew that it was more runs being scored there, but not like this.
Oh, I definitely knew because I remember back in the day when it was being held in the UAE, you know, 140 odd would be defended every now and then, right? And it was drastic when it came back to Pakistan, not just PSL, Test cricket. Pakistan was a great Test team in the UAE, right? But when Test cricket came back to Pakistan, they've only won a couple of series here and there. So if you go and look at that scattergraph in Jared's piece, you'll see how the recent PSL years are all like in one cluster and the UAE PSLs are all in a cluster down below. So it is a really interesting one and you can definitely put it entirely on the pitches, I would say. But let's move on to the Big Bash. Now, we can identify very clearly that this is another bowler-friendly tournament, right? As not a single season in the history of the Big Bash League has seen a strike rate shoot north of 135. Do you think one of the reasons why the 2022 edition of the T20 World Cup, which was held down under, was the slowest T20 World Cup of all time because of the Big Bash League being a bowler-friendly league? Or, you know, it's just because there were certain conditions at that time in Australia, you know, wet pitches and all of that. But also, if you look at the conventional 20-over cricket scoring rates in 2022, it didn't match at all.
No, it's definitely an outlier. Look, I think three things happened. World Cups are usually low scoring. It was early season in Australia, and you know, especially in southern Australia, Tasmania and Geelong were the two where it was like that's not summer for either of those two places. And it rained a lot in some of the other places. It rained in Sydney and Brisbane, I think, certainly in Sydney. It was a lot of rain. So I think it was a combination of all of those things that came together. But you do then look at the Big Bash data and you go, well, it's on the lower end, but it's within the margin of the Big Bash. If you're thinking that the Big Bash is in the height of summer and this one is outside of summer. So yeah, so I think it was a combination of all three. I don't think the Big Bash is seen in the same way that the PSL was always seen, right?
Yeah.
PSL's always been seen as a bowler's league. Big Bash, I've never really heard anyone mention that before. But you look at this data and it'd be hard to argue that it's not dominated by bowlers.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you think that the dimensions of the grounds in Australia also play a part in this? Because they're as big as they get, right? It's not easy to clear the rope over there.
Yeah, it's a weird one because, you know, it's not easy to clear the rope, but it's probably the easiest grounds on earth to score two runs a ball.
also fair.
You know, you watch a game at the MCG or Perth Stadium or, you know, some of these bigger, you know, surfaces, and you think, well, how the hell are they going to put it in field? I remember talking when I was with Melbourne Stars, and I was just like, we should be encouraging our players to chip.
Yeah.
Because they will never go out, and they can score at two runs a ball from pretty much over 10 through to over 16. And then, you know, at the end, they can start looking to clear the boundaries, and other teams will try and clear the boundaries and won't be able to do that. So there is that. But you're right. I do think, I think the grounds play a bit of a part in that, but there are still smaller grounds. I don't think Bellary is particularly big, for instance, and Adelaide Oval has tiny square boundaries that, you know, and you know, there's no ground in the world that actually has their own proper dimensions anymore, right? They're all so far in from the fence. But yeah, I do think the grounds play a little part in that.
Yeah, but it is surprising, actually. You know, when I was going through that data, I was like, okay, Australia, Big Bash League, Bowling League. It did, you know, astonish me a bit because it doesn't have that branding. It's not perceived like that. But as we mentioned, there are a bunch of reasons why that's the case. And yeah, a combination of that and the conditions at that time of the year in Australia, plus the rain and the dimensions, a lot of things why, a lot of reasons behind that World Cup being low scoring. But anyway, let's go to the CPL. And this is important, because we've got a World Cup coming up in the Caribbean, right? At least partially. And the CPL is a funny one, because you look at West Indian batters, they're known for their six-hitting prowess. They get employed by different franchise T20 teams across the world. They're globetrotters, and they go and apply their trade in tournaments. And, you know, that's how they kind of play the circuit. We'll go hit some sixes there, hit some sixes here, this and that. The CPL, however, is one of the slowest scoring leagues in the world, where bowlers basically dominate, and the surfaces, they vary across the board because we're looking at a cluster of different island nations over here in the Caribbean. Mm. But they are common in the sense that they usually slow batters down. Now, in 2023, they did have faster scoring pitches, and the numbers are proof of that in the CPL. But given all of this information, what sort of T20 World Cup can we expect in the Caribbean leg in a month's time?
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's so dependent on the individual pitches. So you can have a tournament in the West Indies, and I don't think there's another place really where this would happen in the world, where depending on where you play, you might have a completely different kind of tournament than another team. You know, it can vary that much, but, you know, between some of these wickets, Barbados and Guyana are just, they're not even related to each other. St. Lucia and Guyana are not really related to each other either. You know, Trinidad's got its own vibe as well. So it is really, really different to everywhere else. You know, and then you get the fact that the World Cups are the slowest scoring tournaments. And that has been consistent all the way through. I think the only The fastest scoring T20 World Cup has been 2007, which is bonkers, right?
So it's the inaugural one.
Yeah. So if you think about that, you would assume that that means that this is going to be another really, really low scoring tournament. Having said that, there has been a bit of a boost towards faster scoring in the CPL of recent times, same as some of the other leagues. So I suppose from that that thinking, you know, you can certainly be in a situation where you at least feel a little bit more confident, but you know, maybe it won't be as dour as some of the other tournaments we've been. But you have to throw in the American side of things, of which I assume is going to be small grounds and flat pitches. So you might then have an even more varied World Cup where maybe in America you get some kind of pitches and in the West Indies you get another kind of pitches. Mm. You know, I can tell you one thing. The New York pitch is not going to be like the Guyana pitch.
Yeah. I mean, anyone can definitely make that assessment because Guyana is one of the slowest surfaces in the world and they're getting a drop-in pitch from Adelaide for the New York ground in Nassau or however you pronounce that. So we can maybe perhaps even expect some bounce over there. But does it intrigue you? Right, that the fastest scoring T20 World Cup was the inaugural edition in South Africa, because that was back in 2007. And this is a time where, you know, T20 cricket was for the most part perceived as somewhat of a gimmick. It wasn't serious business. Maybe that's why it's the fastest scoring one, perhaps?
There's an early year, and I took it off because the data is not as big. And remember, those tournaments didn't have a lot of games compared to later on. I only left it in because, you know, I was... You know, a big part of the reason I did this piece was to show how different the IPL is than what the World Cups usually are.
Yeah.
But specifically, I think if you, there's an early year in T20 cricket, and I reckon it's 2009 or 2010, that's really high scoring. Mm. And it would be probably more like the last 3 years than the era that it's in. So we have had situations like that before. You know, South Africa, you have, I can't remember where all the games were, but you quite often, you have the altitude. Mm-hmm. So you get a lot of sixes scored. You know, you talk about Australia, it's kind of the opposite of Australia, right? And from that point of view, there's a lot of the grounds are up high. They're not as big as the Australian grounds. And the pitches are really rock hard. So the ball travels really, really quickly. You know, the record score we had in Joburg and the Wanderers all those years ago. Mm-hmm. So I do think there's an element of all of that that I've just said that I do think plays a part. What's a better way of looking at it as well? And because people didn't know how to play it, there was a lot more slogging, right? Whereas I think as teams got smarter, they actually got more conservative with the way that they played T20 cricket. Hmm. So now it's a combination of those two things. It's like you want to be able to consistently score fast, but in a smart way. But back then, it was probably you score fast, right? Or you're quite consistent. And so I can understand why that 2007 season might be the biggest one based on everything we've just said. But even then, it's not like a high strike rate, is it? It's still under, is it under 130 still, I think?
It's 124, which tells you a lot about World Cup cricket, doesn't it? And the pressures of international cricket, I suppose, how when nation states are competing, there's a whole lot at stake. And all of these cup competitions in the ICC, people take them far more seriously. And then, of course, you're donning your nation's jersey, which for a lot of teams adds that extra layer of pressure as well. So it's a completely different beast.
Yeah, I remember in 2015, I said that, you know, there was a couple of teams that had the ability to score 500 runs against some of the associate teams in Australia on the hard tracks and what we expect to be some good batting surfaces in Australia, also small grounds in New Zealand. Hmm. And, you know, that didn't really come about. And the more I think about it now, the more I think about, remember the game when England should have made 500 against the Netherlands? Hmm. That's the kind of game that actually these teams should score 500. In World Cups, you usually see, you know, that little bit of more hesitancy, right, in the way that people play. You know, South Africa is the gold-crusted example of this. You know, we all know that there is an issue with the way that they play. But I think if you go through most World Cups, there's a lot of teams that do that. And it might be one reason why Australia is a little bit better at World Cups and that they continue to play in a similar method, whereas I think other teams think, well, this is the big one, and it changes things. But, yeah, there's no doubt. But so it does make this next World Cup fascinating. Right, of how that's going to go.
Yeah, and for those of you who want some context, go to the piece and see just how low the World Cups are compared to all of the other franchise T20 leagues. I mean, if the fastest scoring World Cup of all time is the first one, and that combined strike rate is 124, that's not a high strike rate at all. But
well, I mean, if you look at it, if the World Cup was a league, would we watch it? Because it's a really dour league. Like, you look at those scores and you think to yourself, poor. Have you watched much of the CPL? Because when you're in Canada, it would have been a good time zone. Did you watch much of it?
I have. I especially watched a lot of it when early days, you know, you got to see a lot of Pakistan players playing it.
Yeah.
So that really drew me towards the CPL. And I mean, I remember that season where the Talawas were great. One of the seasons where Barbados were great. But I haven't really religiously followed it every year. Every now and then I would.
It can be crap to watch.
Mm-hmm. The start of the PSL.
One reason I didn't get into the early PSL was a similar one. And it's not that I want it to be specifically, batter friendly or bowler friendly. But I've got no problem with lots of wickets. But I'm also going to want some runs as well. I want some life. Yeah. And, you know, you look at where the World Cup is on that map and you're like, it doesn't look particularly good. And the CPL is the league it's probably most closely aligned to. And I find the CPL a frustrating watch at times, from game to game.
Well, we did have a decent scoring year in the CPL last year, so maybe that's bound to change. But that brings me to probably one of the most important questions over here, that can we expect that record of combined strike rate of 124 set in 2007 in the T20 World Cup to be breached this year? I mean, you've got the slow surfaces in the Caribbean and the added, you know, layer of pressure for international teams competing against each other. But then you mentioned that we might get some really batting-friendly surfaces in the USA with small ground dimensions. So 124 is not a tough record to usurp.
No. I mean, we should be able to get past it, right? I think that's fair. We would both agree with that. I think something changed in 2023. And I think you can see it through all these different leagues. And some of these leagues haven't played a second year yet. And I know there was some regression in some of these leagues as well. But I think it was around 2023 when there's been a bit of a jump up everywhere. And so with that in mind, I just think, I know Fraser Van Gogh's a bad example because he's not going to be playing. But, you know, and Abhishek Sharma I was going to use as well. He's not playing either.
Head.
But
Travis, you know what I mean? Head is your guy.
Yeah, Travis Head, you know, is a really good example. Heinrich Klaassen is another really good example. Sky's been doing it for a little while, right? Mm-hmm. There's some Shivam Dubey, and the whole England batting lineup, right? Mm-hmm. And Nicholas Puran and these sorts of guys, they've just reached another level, mm-hmm. I think, of that they can unlock now. And so with that, I would find it very hard to believe that there's not going to be a bigger year coming off the back of that. But having said that, you look at the data and it suggests to you, doesn't matter what happens, teams just don't score in World Cup. So I don't know.
I mean, 125 at the very least, right?
It has to be the fastest scoring one, doesn't it?
Yeah. But coming to the IPL now, because we've talked about all the other leagues and this is the big one that we really need to discuss. Now, it has always been a batting league, right? The last time the tournament had a bowling year was back in 2009, which was the third edition of the competition. So when compared to the Big Bash League and the CPL, even the frugal IPL years have been more run heavy, and then in 2023, of course, you talk about that moment where everything changes. And that's another reason why that could have happened, particularly in the IPL, is because the impact sub rule comes in, right? That was introduced and we saw a significant uptick in scoring rate. And, you know, there are a bunch of reasons why batters bat the way they do right now, but specifically when talking about the IPL, just because the impact sub provides such flexibility, and like you said, Ramandeep is coming out to bat at number 9. When you talk about this IPL and the previous one in isolation, how much of an impact does the impact sub law or rule play on its own? There's other things, but just this, how significant is it?
It's interesting because Australian one called the X Factor.
Surge, power surge and something.
They
like
had
that.
The two different moves. Doesn't really seem to have impacted their league all that much, other than the fact that it ruined a lot of us when we were trying to keep data on things. so I do think the impact sub has been a lot bigger than that. I don't think it matters that you have Ramandeep batting at number 9. Or, I think the Chennai might have had some really deep batting lineups last year as well. I don't think it matters as much from that point of view. And I think teams are using it more. As in, if he's batting at nine, you're probably not going to use him that much anyway. But the Evan Gulbis effect, which we've talked about before, is when you are batting, and you're opening the batting and you look up and number seven is Ashwin. Think to yourself, okay, I know he can hold a bat, but we're going to have to do a bit of work here. And, you know, I've been playing club cricket of recent times with some batting orders where the guys batting down the order can't bat, right? And it changes the way that you go about your batting. It's really hard not to. You know, maybe for someone like Vrunda Sehwag, you don't notice stuff like that. For every other normal human being, you know, they are completely involved in that and, you know, and get sucked in by that. So with that, so you add that, the mental side of that to it, I think that's absolutely huge. And then once you start to bat like Travis Head or Abhishek Sharma or who else we talk, Fraser McGurk and Sunil Narine and Phil Salt, like all those sorts of guys, once they start to bat like that and they start hitting the ball out of the park regularly, it really is what we have learned from T20 cricket's impact on ODI cricket, on ODI cricket's impact on Test cricket, right? These things feed off themselves. Suddenly a guy's like, oh, I can go that hard and I can get away with it, right? And, you know, the West Indies method of going, if it's a good ball, we block it. And if it's a bad ball, we hit it for six. If we can't hit it for six, we hit it for four. Is a method now that teams all around the world have managed to work out. And then individual matchups and who they're going to go up against and all these sorts of things. You know, things have changed, right? And so with all of that, I think what you are seeing is the, you know, this explosion of belief. Because I think that's what me and Freddie always felt was they would do it once and they would fail and it wouldn't work or whatever. And now you're looking at it and you're just like, you're probably better off to play like Kolkata or Sunrisers. If you've got a side set up to be able to do that, then you are to knock it around like another team and hope that your bowlers can dominate. And with the impact sub, it's so hard to bowl teams out.
Yeah, I mean, it's nearly impossible. Plus, you know, I think you're very right when you say that, you know, current era batters and even batters who are experienced and now have evolved, they've kind of unlocked that different mode where they're just fearless and they're like, okay, we're going to throw the kitchen sink at it. Travis Head is a brilliant example of this. Travis Head's career T20 numbers don't really hold up, but you look at him recently and you're like, yeah, that's probably one of the first names on Australia's team sheets. Like, he has to be opening the batting. And it's just the punchy nature of his batting, you know, pitch it up, you know, bang it in short, whatever you do, he's going to hit you. So that's something that is a recent development in his career. And of course, we mentioned earlier as well that if you put all of these major leagues from all of those years with their combined strike rates and averages, you know, and then you put in the World Cups, the gulf is, you know, insane because the World Cups are kind of like sweeping the floor over there in comparison to all of those leagues. And we've also mentioned how it's a different beast altogether. But when you remove all the other ones, just throw in the IPL tournaments and the World Cups, that gulf becomes even more massive. There's like daylight between those two. And you look at the ongoing IPL and you see that it's reached this other level altogether. Like, it's an anomaly on its own, on that scatter graph. It's like that one dot all the way towards the right, right? So, I mean, of course, the impact sub is there. But as you mentioned, batters are braver. They've unlocked that mode. The game has evolved. You've got, you know, intricate details in T20 cricket, which define broader game plans, such as matchups and entry points and all of that fun stuff. Do you see any of the belligerence that we are experiencing in the IPL spill into the T20 World Cup a month later?
If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Yeah, I do. I do think it will have an impact. Whether it works or not, I don't know. But I do think there will be an impact of anyone who's watched this tournament will realize there is a new ceiling. So I talk about a little bit of, is this IPL season like the 400-400 game? Between the two teams, between Australia and South Africa. That was it. That happened. And it let us know that where we could get to, but we didn't get anywhere near that for ages, right? We didn't have a slew of games. You know, this whole thing, do you remember that point? Was it 2019? Everyone's like, 300's a new par. Is it? No one scored 300. Where are all these 300 scores you're all promising us, right? Yeah. So I think straight away, you look at something like that and you do think to yourself, okay, so something has changed here. And there is, a difference in the game as it is played at the moment compared to, the way that it could be played, right? So I think instantly you understand that people have got that. But there's a big difference between that and then actually believing that that can happen, right? Do you know what I mean? So this is, to go back to the 400 game, so Australia, South Africa in 2006, 2007, was it?
Whatever I want to say was. Six.
Yeah, that game in that we were talking about before. That you talked about is, and they understood that they were in a position where that sort of stuff was going to happen more often, right? And that they could get there. But the next games weren't like that. But they did think differently. Is this a season that is actually just part of a natural curve up, which it could be? Or is this a season where everything has just gone right for the batters and we're already seeing tougher conditions, right? Yeah. So I did this video on, I think the data is from the 1st of May.
Yes.
And we've already seen a bunch of lower scoring games since then. And we saw a couple coming into the 1st of May as well, right? Yep. Is it just a conditions-based thing? And you look at this map, and I would say to you that T20 cricket is a conditions-based sport more than we probably ever give it credit for. But when you look at this and you see all the patterns and everything else, it's like, it's all well and good to say the mindset has changed and look at this IPL, everyone's going to score a million runs. It's like, are they? Let's, I'll reserve that for the next time I see a CPL game in Guyana, right? I'll believe that when there's a big bash year, when they all score over a strike rate of 145, right? And if that starts to happen, I'm on board, Barham, right? Yeah. That means the train has come. My guess is we will see a couple more outlier seasons like this, but I don't think everywhere can do this. And I do think that that means that the IPL is an individual part of it. And if you look at the data of the IPL, we talked about the two and a half batting leagues, Pakistan and Pakistan, the Blast and the IPL. The IPL is still the dominant batting league of those three leagues, right?
Yes.
And if you go through the history of ODI cricket and Test cricket, what do we know about India? It's a great place to bat, right? We never say, that's not something we say about West Indies ever.
Yeah.
Right. No one ever says West Indies is a great place to bat. Occasionally you get flat pitches, but you don't say it's a great place to bat, right? And SA20, when I have 2 or 3 years of data or that, I'd be really fascinated to see where that one comes up. Because that's also, looks like to me, people are making runs, but I want to see a couple more years. And I wanted to, the IL and the SA20, I just wanted to see them a little bit more cricket before I made any decisions there. But it does look like more often than not, the conditions still dictate. And, And England is a place that for white ball cricket went all in on runs at very early point, probably around 2008, 2009. So you can change that. You can change what your pitches are, but you probably need money. You probably need the support of everyone involved. And then you go about it from that perspective. But it's fascinating anyway of how much these wickets still drive the game, despite the fact that we probably don't always think about it that way in T20 cricket.
I think it's just not said enough, you know, that conditions do dictate the play to a large extent. And sometimes you'll be like, oh, why is this team not close to 60 in the power play? Well, maybe they can't get there on that particular surface, right? Even though I would argue that even on slow surfaces, people should really go for it in the power play when the ball is hard. But yeah, I mean, I think another thing why the IPL sees such heavy run scoring is because India on its own, yes, it's a great place to bat, but it also produces great batters. So yes, that also kind of, you know, feeds into that narrative.
And you do see that. India and Australia, I think, probably have the, you know, the two best batting crops since World War II. And they are probably the two places that it is the best to bat. You know, there's challenges in both of those places. But I almost think the challenges are more for the overseas players than they are for the local players. And so you do see great batting come out of those places in a way that we don't always see with other countries. So, yeah, I think that's another great way of looking at it, right? Of how those things go. And, you know, small grounds helps as well. Yeah, lightning fast outfields. You know, there's a few things that India has.
Dew always helps.
Yeah, actually, do you know what? I wonder if India is one of the dewiest places when it comes to cricket. Although having said that, you would have thought the UAE would have been quite dewy. And yet doesn't seem to really... it doesn't seem to really come across that way, does it? When you look at these data, so
it's called the UAE, Jared, not the DUAE.
Hey.
But yeah, India and even Pakistan, at least at this time of the year, April, May, you get a lot of dew. But ultimately, of course, the IPL is also a different beast, and it's completely unfair to compare that tournament to World Cup cricket, because again, as I mentioned before, and we both agreed that, you know, in World Cups, players are playing for their nations. They are under more pressure to perform and win games. And the impact sub rule won't exist in the Caribbean, the USA in a month's time. And the pitches aren't going to be as flat, at least in the Caribbean, as they are in India currently. But, you know, there is a chance that this T20 World Cup, as we've both agreed upon, will probably be the highest scoring one, or will have the highest combined strike rate of any T20 World Cup ever before. And, you know, you mentioned the 400 game, the game in which it was chased by South Africa at the Wanderers. And that was, in a way, an inflection point in the sport, but we saw the results come in later. We could be in the midst of an inflection point right now. You know, just look at the Sunrisers bat. They're actually batting right now. I don't know how well they're doing, but you look at them bat and that screams inflection point.
Yes. And it's not just them, is it? You know, KKR, Mumbai, Delhi. So there's four teams in the IPL. Am I missing any? Kolkata.
Kolkata. Delhi, Mumbai, Sunrisers. I think you got all of them, yeah.
Yeah, so is that four or five
Because Gujarat's not in this.
Yeah.
It's as further away as it can be from this conversation.
And even some of those other teams that aren't as full
Put Punjab in there, they chase down 60.
Yeah, so, you know, you look at that and you go, that to me, at least IPL specific, suggests something else. But those things will catch on from other places. But if you go back and you play in the BPL, right, and, you know, and you get a couple of stickier wickets, or if you, you know, you play at the Gabba and it seems around a little bit or whatever, you can be as intenseness as you want. You can have all the intent in the world. You're still not going to be able to do all that much with it, right? Like, you know, so that's the truth side of that. But we have seen now, we have had three revolutions in all three formats of cricket with scoring rates in the last, what, 6-7 years? From 2015 onwards.
Count how Australia played both the limited overs and test cricket back in the early 2000s as well.
Yeah, I mean, Australia had it. But that was, what was that, to 98? And then 2015, England is the next sort of big bang that we see. Then we see baseball. And now we're seeing this current T20 storm happening. So that means from 2015 to now, so the last 9 years, we've had all three formats have had a boom. It's not an accident, right? Batters are understanding what they can do. And bowlers can bowl the greatest delivery of all time, and they're finding better ways of being defensive bowlers. I actually still think the bowlers are doing quite well, despite all the talk.
New shots are coming in and becoming mainstream, like the Klaassen shot and how Fraser McGurk was doing something similar versus spinners when they bowl at a good length, right? Which wasn't happening before. So you're seeing the evolution happen firsthand right in front of our faces.
I think I did a piece about 6 or 7 years ago for Crick Info where there was only like six major T20 players who scored quicker against spin than pace. And I remember Cameron Akmal was massively faster against spin than pace. And I think Chris Gayle might have been one of the others. Everyone else was way quicker against pace than spin. Mm. You're now watching, some of these new players come through and you're like, they're going to be able to score at almost 2 runs a ball against spin.
Yeah.
And so that is a huge change in the way that we think about the game. And, and because of that, there's no way around it, right? Like it is what it is, which is we are in a situation where players have unlocked something. I think spin was the thing probably keeping the rates down and the middle overs and people knocking the ball around. If people aren't going to do that anymore, there should be, we should see more and more rises.
Yeah. And I mean, whilst this upcoming T20 World Cup might not be, an anomaly in terms of scoring rates and might not be the most, it might not match up to anything that we're seeing in the franchise leagues across the world. But currently what we're experiencing is that it's on the horizon. It's on the cusp. It will happen eventually where teams will start to score quickly. And, let's see how quickly that happens. But before we call it quits on this podcast, just want to take a quick prediction from you. Tell me what you think the combined strike rate for this T20 World Cup will be. We'll both give a number and then we'll see who wins.
I'm going to go 131.
I'm going to go 128.
Okay.
Yeah. I think more games are in the Caribbean and, all of these teams are selecting tons of spinners in their teams as well. In the squads, if you've noticed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, also, the only other thing I would say that's in your favor is that players like Abhishek Sharma and Fraser McGurk are not being picked.
Yep.
Right? So teams are still just holding firm on the old guys a little bit longer, the more conservative batters. That makes me a little bit nervous. I just think that the last World Cup was a real anomaly just because of the weather conditions in Australia and it being out of season. I think that there'll be a natural... I don't think that... I could be wrong, but I just don't believe the ICC are going to allow for another bowler-dominated tournament. They're going to need some runs, but it's not going to be a run fest. If it was a run fest and it was over 135, I would be absolutely shocked.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a vast variety of different surfaces. And the ICC always kind of, has that balance in their tournaments. And then every now and then they'll throw in a slow surface in the knockouts. That always happens as well. But anyway, you guys let us know what you think the combined strike rate of this upcoming T20 World Cup would be. Jared said 131, I said 128. Go and tell us what you think it will be in the comments. The highest ever combined strike rate for any T20 World Cup is 124 in 2007. But that brings us towards a conclusion in this podcast. And as mentioned earlier, for all of our written work, videos and podcasts, you can go to goodareas.co. That can be a one-stop shop for all of the work that our team carries out. And that's an end for this Footmarks episode. We'll be back with another episode next week. Till then, you guys have fun. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.